compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Buenos dias, muchas enchiladas. Happy Taco Tuesday. I love saying that. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show, where this is a free-range program, and we're happy to talk about whatever is on your mind. Give me a call at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Cyrus, I'm trying to think, over the last year or so, do you recall if I ever touched on an issue related to, like, vaccines or a vaccine passport? Did that ever come up in conversation on this program that you remember?
A vaccine passport, like where you'd have to have a passport identifying that you've been vaccinated before you go?
Yeah,
like,
that kind of thing.
On an airplane or into a grocery store or to a ballpark?
Yeah, kind of like that.
Doesn't ring a bell.
No. I had to stop and think myself, did I ever talk about that? So this might be all new territory for everybody. But do we have anything that we could play that says, I told you so?
I should have that on standby.
You should.
Yeah, my buddy was just, he's like, oh, I'm going to go to Dodger Stadium probably for the last time. I'm like,
well I've got a Dodger Stadium story to share with you as well. Yeah. We'll get to that. But in the meantime, oh, by the way, Cyrus, complete pivot into nothing that's related to the vaccine passport. But I was speaking throughout the great state of Florida 2 weeks ago. I am not kidding you. I am seriously not kidding you. At least probably a dozen people spread across not quite half a dozen events asked me, independent of one another, if there's some way that you could be out there doing talks or being at my talks because they want to meet you. It's getting out of control. And I hesitated in telling you this because I know that, you know, I know how it is. But
it's only going to be a matter of time before you have to push me back under that rock from whence I came.
From whence you came, yeah. But they really do. They really, you have a cult following. You really do. And I saw it up close and personal when I was traveling through Florida. It's amazing.
Let's get back to this vaccination.
Yeah. I just wanted you to know that. I don't even know why that popped into my head. Team weird. Cyrus is activating right now. Okay, so back to the vaccine passport that I probably never talked about before. The Daily Caller has an article, Americans will need a vaccine passport in order to travel to Europe this summer. More than 1 year after the European Union shut down non-essential travel from most of the world, it's reopening its borders to American tourists this summer. There's one catch, however. So if you're planning your trip to Europe, your grand tour this summer, Cyrus, just be aware that you will have to be fully vaccinated against COVID-19. This, according to the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen. She told this to the New York Times. American and European officials have reportedly been in talks on how to create a vaccine certificate to clear citizens for international travel. Ms. von der Leyen, she said to the New York Times, all 27 member states will accept unconditionally all those who are vaccinated with vaccines that are approved by the EMA, European Medical Agencies. All three vaccines currently used in the United States, Moderna, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, have been approved by the European Union, et cetera, et cetera. Details on how exactly travelers will prove their vaccination status is still being worked out. A low-tech option might suffice in the short term until an official and internationally recognized vaccine certificate is developed, according to the Times. Now, they tried that, interestingly, in Israel, going back now some months. And as you may remember, Cyrus, we talked about this on the program. There was they were rife with black market forgeries of this paper that had a barcode. And anybody, you know, a kid in his mother's basement could make one of these things. And so they were selling them on the black market. And so it didn't work out very well. And I guess they're transitioning to the digital version of this. But, you know, it's happening. And it's happening steadily, and we'll see whether or not this becomes something mandatory for other things that you might want to do. But for the moment, at least, as far as the European Union is concerned, you can go. But you have to have a vaccine passport of some sort, and I will keep you informed on how that develops.
You know, somehow, I told you so, just doesn't quite say it.
You were frantically searching for that, weren't you?
Is there a camera in here?
Now, I told you I had a Dodger story. The Dodgers, Cyrus, are debuting at Dodger Stadium. They actually just did debut this past weekend in a game against the Padres. a fully vaccinated fan section. So if you could sit in this section, it was section 166 LG and 168 LG in the Loge level, and they reserved it for fans who had had both vaccination doses, as well as for children between the ages of 12 and 15 who can provide proof of having tested negative for the virus. Children under the age of 2 don't need to provide proof of a negative COVID-19 test. Social distancing is not required in that section. It's a fully vaccinated only section. People in those sections will be seated directly next to others. Face coverings must be worn in these sections, except while actively eating or drinking in the ticketed seat. Those who are unable to prove their eligibility will be denied entry to the fully vaccinated fan section. How are you going to react, Cyrus, when you know you're being shown into the restaurant, you and your wife and your children, and they say, now, would you like the fully vaccinated section, or would you like the, you know, the other section?
The one right next to the bathrooms.
It's getting there. It is getting there. 888-914-9149 is the number. Why don't we do some phone calls? We'll start with Richard listening in Northwest Indiana. Hi, Richard.
Good morning, sir. Sir, I have a question that's been troubling for quite a while, and I haven't been able to get on, but I was told to ask a question of Patrick's. I listen on a regular basis, and really, it really changed my life, Patrick.
Thank you.
So I'd like to thank you. Our son was taken from us about 25 years ago. He was murdered. Okay. And we pray religiously, my wife, my sister, and myself, okay? And we were just wondering, because he didn't live long, he was a good kid, and I felt 6-7 years ago that I had a great feeling, you know, and it seemed like he went to heaven.
Yeah.
What happens to all these prayers if he's on the other end, Patrick?
Mm-hmm.
And I've been told, you know, that's a great question, but we're just wondering, how does that filter, if he is up in heaven, all these prayers that we are saying on a regular basis, because I say a rosary a day for him, and my wife prays too.
That's a beautiful thing that you're doing, praying for your son, and I'm so sorry to hear about this tragedy. I really don't have words to offer adequate condolences. I realize it's 25 years ago, but I'm sure it still hurts.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah, every day. Yeah, it never goes away. But we only have great thoughts, and he was a great human being, and his name was David.
David. So. I was going to ask you his name. Well, thank you for letting me know that so we can pray for the repose of his soul. So let's talk about your question. What happens to all your prayers if it turns out that David went quickly to heaven? Maybe he went straight to heaven. And when you get there, you'll find out. But what about all the prayers if, in fact, he's been in heaven? Well, this is the great thing about that, and that is that your prayers are not wasted. So if somebody is already in heaven, your prayers are applied by God to those who need them. And that would be for those in this life, of course, but also if you're remembering the souls of those who have died, the Lord will apply your prayers and their merits to the souls in purgatory, who will also be praying for you when they get to heaven. They won't forget you, which is one of the reasons why it's so good and important for us to pray for the holy souls, the souls in purgatory. So none of your prayers are wasted. And if you pray until the very last breath in your body, and then you go to heaven and you find out, wow, David, you've been in heaven this whole time. Well, all your prayers were put to good use. So you don't have to worry, even in the slightest.
Well, I hope that's really helpful, appreciate Richard. That, Patrick. Thank you.
Yeah. And as you told me the situation, I was reminded of what Jesus said. Remember, he said that the blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. So all of the mourning and all of the tears and everything associated with this heavy cross that you and your wife and your family have been carrying, look forward to that. I'm sure others have reminded you of that, and I'm sure you've thought of that. But if you don't mind my saying so, all of those tears will be wiped away when the time comes. And the reunion we will have in heaven with our loved ones will be just unbelievably great. So something to, I hope, will bring you some more consolation. Richard, thank you. I appreciate it. And thank you for letting us know your son's name. We will pray for David. I'll ask everybody listening to do that. Thank you. 888-914-9149. We'll go now to Andrea listening in Belgrade, Montana. I know that little town right next to the airport. Hi, Andrea.
Yes, it is. How are you today?
Oh, I am doing well. Thank you.
Hey, I just wanted to call today. Things can get a little bit oppressive with the current leadership, with the Democrats in the White House and the Catholics that don't follow their faith. And I've been trying really hard just to keep my spirits up. And I have some wonderful news for the great relevant radio listeners today.
Okay.
There are little inches forward. The great state of Montana yesterday with our wonderful governor, Greg Gianforte, passed 3 major pro-life bills for our state. And
okay.
We're super excited about it. And I heard it on your news at the top of the hour. I believe it was Nebraska that also did that. So just a little bit of a punch of adrenaline in our arms today that there are some good things going on. It just feels like inches right now. It feels glacial, actually.
I can understand your sense of, you know, how long will it take for things to get better? Let me, first of all, thank you, Andrea, for sharing that information with me. I had not heard that good news, so thank you. But let me offer you something to chew on. You know, as bad as things seem right now, and there are some really bad things that we have to deal with, one temptation we should not fall into is to assume that this is as bad as it's ever been, or that no generation has ever had to go through what we have to go through, and look at the crazy politicians. And I mean, it's been like that always in every generation. Oh, this place is just going to hell in a bucket. Every generation has those same feelings, it seems. So as a matter of perspective, this helps me. So I'm offering this to you in case it might be helpful to you. I just take it in stride. I don't think things are much worse than they've been for most of the time. And there have been some times that are far worse than they are now. So that helps me not to go crazy. I just offer you that for your consideration.
Yep, I completely agree. And passage about trials and tribulations, have no fear. That really
right.
helps me as well. But
that's good.
I just wanted to give a shout out because I think we all need a little bit of positive, you know.
And we do indeed.
It was super rejoicing in Montana yesterday.
Hey, how is Father Eric Gilbaugh of Arrivederci Roma fame? How is he doing? He's the pastor there in Belgrade.
He's fantastic. We are breaking ground. We are halfway finished with increasing the size of Divine Mercy Academy in Belgrade here, and we are breaking ground on Monday to increase the size of our church. So praise the Lord.
Wonderful. Yeah, praise the Lord indeed. And you have a great shepherd with Father Eric. Please pass along my kind regards to him and to the rest of the parish there. I had a chance to visit for Mass one Sunday. Years ago, I was in the area for something. And much to my happy surprise, the parish is literally right at the airport. I mean, you walk out the front door of the parish and you can see the planes landing. So that was convenient, to say the least. Thank you. 888-914-9149. We'll go now to Philadelphia and talk to Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hi, good morning, Patrick.
Yes, sir. Welcome.
Yes, hi. Yeah, good morning. I'd like to know if there's a book that you can recommend that has an honest history addressing the atrocities that the Catholic Church is accused of. Now, I realize the Spanish Inquisition was a horribly exaggerated, debunked thing. But as far as, you know, burning of heretics and things, I went through 8 years of Catholic grade school, 4 years of Catholic high school. I never heard a negative thing about the Catholic Church. And I'm still a strong Catholic, but I would like to know an honest history of, you know, you know what I'm getting at?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. I can give you several good books. So let me, what you mentioned, the Inquisition. So why don't we start there? The Inquisition is largely unknown in terms of its actual historical details. And a myth was popularized in the United States, of all people, one of the most I don't know, influential Americans who popularized the myth of what happened at the Inquisition was Edgar Allan Poe. And in some of his brilliant writings, I'm a huge fan of Edgar Allan Poe. I've got all of his collected works, and I really enjoy what he did and his talent. But he was almost single-handedly responsible for inflaming the popular mind in the United States in the early part of the 19th century with lurid tales of the Inquisition that were based basically in flights of fancy. Similarly, and this would be a video that you can find even to this day on YouTube, the BBC, going back now about 20 years, the BBC did, and the BBC, as you probably know, is very much to the left. They're not friends of the Catholic Church in any traditional sense, that's for sure. But a team of researchers, they researched and debunked what is known as the Black Legend. Now, the Black Legend was a psychological operation, a psyop that was undertaken by the British during the time of its rivalry with Spain, especially with regard to acquisition of new lands and colonization and gold and all of the things that they were competing with Spain for. The British, they turned the populace, which had been Catholic, keep this in mind, this is part of the whole story about the Spanish Inquisition. England had been Catholic, effectively speaking, for about 1,000 years, just shy of 1,000 years before King Henry VIII broke away from the Catholic Church over the issue of wanting to get a divorce and get remarried. So they didn't come upon this all at once, but a big part of what the English crown wanted to do was to solidify the allegiance of the British people who had just had their Catholic faith, which they had had as a people for about 1,000 years, forcibly taken from them. Many of them were killed, of course, if they refused to join the new religion. So this was a very handy tool in the hands of the British, because they were able to turn the affections of the people not only away from the Catholic Church, but also any kind of sympathy for the Catholic Church, because they made Spain sort of represent the Catholic Church. And these tales of mass killings of people and people just being rounded up indiscriminately because people didn't like them and burning them at the stake and torturing them. Most of these things simply are untrue. There are some elements to it that are true. So I come back to the BBC. This was really a groundbreaking effort on their part to engage in historical honesty, and they completely debunked the Black Legend. So these are British, non-Catholic, I believe they were all secular, historians, and this ran on the BBC. So it's about an hour long, and you can search for it on Google and find it on YouTube. That would be another very helpful thing to understand the Spanish Inquisition. Now, I don't want to just camp out on the Spanish Inquisition, but you're asking for some statistics. Okay, well, there's a book that was written in the late 19th century, I believe it was called Characters of the Inquisition. And I'm trying to remember the name of the author, but it's published by Tan Books. And if you go there, tanbooks.com, I think it is, you can find this book, and it is a detailed historical analysis that gets right down to the penny. How many people were tortured? What cities were they tortured in? How were they tortured? How did this compare, for example, with torture as it was meted out in civil courts, secular courts, and not just in Spain? This was true in Protestant England and in Huguenot France and a variety of other places. Torture was actually considered de rigueur. It was considered acceptable at the time. We don't look at it that way, obviously, but we have to keep our perception of these historical events in perspective. So that book, and I'm going to have to find it during the break, and then I'll tell you when I come back what the name is. But if you want a book that will give you detailed historical accounts of the Inquisition, who is involved, what happened, you will find it, and that is a book that I will get the name for you. Another set of books that will give you, again, very specific, very meticulous documentation about the history of the church in other dark chapters, the medieval Inquisition against the Cathars, for example. You name it. It's very frank and very detailed. I would recommend the books by Dr. Warren Carroll. He, as I mentioned yesterday, I think he was the founder of Christendom College, and he was an historian by training. I believe he got his PhD in history at Columbia University. And so he is one of the foremost, well, he's gone on to his eternal reward, but he was one of the foremost historians of the Catholic Church during his lifetime. And his books are rich with detail. So even just the footnotes are worth reading. And I believe it ran to 7 volumes, his History of Christendom. So if you look up at your local Catholic bookstore, History of Christendom by Warren Carroll, each volume is maybe 600-700 pages. And it takes Catholic history in these chunks of time. And he leaves no rock unturned. He gives as much detail as you can imagine. And that would be a good place to start. Now, in that book, I'll leave it at this. In those books, he heavily footnotes with other works that you can pursue. So if you want an extensive historical accounting of whatever the chapter may be that you're interested in looking at, his documentation will lead you to many other works of history that will help you. I'll have to leave it at that, though. I've got a break I've got to take. I hope that's helpful, Steve. I really do. And I think you're going to enjoy reading Warren Carroll's work. All right, quick time out, and we'll be right back with more right after this.
I told you so. Oh, I told you so.
Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I like this. That's good bass right there.
I had a feeling he'd like that one.
Yeah, that's really good. In fact, I'd like to isolate the bass track on this.
That's just a drummer and a bassist. That's it.
Yeah.
Just the two guys.
You know, you've heard of a power trio. The Police were a power trio. Rush is a power trio. That's a power duo right there.
Yeah. Phenomenal bass, playing.
Bass and drums. Yeah. Good stuff. Okay. So just some more just to round out since, you know, I know we haven't hardly ever talked about vaccines on this program. I can try to remember when we ever talked about that, but I've got a little something just to round things out. This is for your good to know file, Cyrus. We talked about places like Oregon yesterday, and you're from Oregon, and I know it's not pronounced Oregon. I know that, but I just like to say that. In school, when a kid and you would say Oregon, he also said Washington too. I don't know why people say Washington. I said, man, you're brainwashed.
Do you say wrestling?
I don't remember if he said that or not, but he definitely would say Oregon and Washington. And I told him he was brainwashed.
what is the story you're trying to
tell? All right. Settle down. This has to do with Seattle, Washington. At least one vaccination site in Seattle, check it out, is placing white people on a standby list. If they want to make an online appointment for a COVID-19 shot, the African American Reach and Teach Health Ministry, AARTH, they have 4 upcoming vaccination events listed on their website. But people who attempt to sign up for their vaccination at the Fred Hutch, write this down because you don't want to show up at the wrong place. The Fred Hutch Cancer Research Center, you first have to indicate whether you are Black, Indigenous, or, as the saying goes nowadays, a person of color. If not, you have to go on a wait list. AARTH consultant Twanda Hill told a media person that the discrimination was due to the group's funding sources. We have funding because we are able to reach people of color. She said federal funding, state funding, county funding. They want to know who we are serving. No, that they want to know the color of the skin of the people they're serving. Hill said that white people aren't barred from getting a vaccine because a small portion of the people on the white standby list have made it through and gotten appointments. People who lie about their race also are not turned away when they show up. The entire list of non-white applicants must be exhausted before the white standby list will begin to be tapped to fill vacancies. This according to the organization. The Washington State Department of Health reportedly told Rantz that the waiting list is part of the state's goal to distribute vaccines equitably. And this from a spokeswoman from the state of Washington, the health department, said prioritization is designed to address current inequities and barriers to accessing the vaccine and get the people who are at highest risk vaccinated first while federal vaccine supplies remain limited. While non-white Americans have statistically experienced worse health outcomes during the COVID-19 pandemic, there is no medical evidence that race alone makes somebody more susceptible to serious illness or death from the virus. So that's happening. And I bring this to your attention not because, I mean, there's really not much you can do about it. The state itself seems to be backing this up. But let's just call it what it is. That's racism. That's what that is. That is racism. It's under the guise of being anti-racist. But you can, I don't mean you personally, but somebody could say, well, I'm against racism, and then they can engage in forms of racism themselves. And we see that all the time. And this is an example of that, where in the name of, ostensibly at least, fighting against racism, they engage in racism. So let's just, this is your regular reminder that if somebody is discriminating against a group of people or an individual on the basis of his or her skin color, that's racism. That's all it is. And all of the efforts to try to gussy that up and put perfume on it and airbrush it and make it into something that it's really not, I believe the best way to deal with these kinds of inequities and injustices is to call them what they really are. Now, there's another example of this. Now, this is, I want to do a hypothetical, Cyrus, with you, okay? Imagine that there were, okay, so I'm probably not going to get the right name for it, but you know that there are like Black Entertainment Award programs, and I'm probably just not remembering the name of it, but where they will honor Black performers. Cyrus.
Yes.
Pay attention. Okay.
I'm trying to think what that's called. Is it the BET?
There's an award ceremony, and I know that BET, Black Entertainment Television, is an entity, but for lack of knowing what it is, we'll just, I mean, it exists. There are certain award ceremonies that honor the work of, in this case, Black performers. Fine. Okay. That's okay. I've got nothing against that. But imagine if, and this is my thought experiment for you, Cyrus. Imagine if a white, let's just say a man, was to say, I identify as Black. Now, he's not Black. He's white. And all of the scientific markers that demonstrate this could be brought to the fore. But he says, you know, I want to compete in that entertainment category. I want to win in that category. So I'm going to identify as Black. Even though I'm not Black, I'm going to identify as Black. And I wonder what would happen if that guy suddenly started winning all the awards. Do you think that the reaction, do you think there would be a reaction to that, Cyrus?
Well, you can identify as...
No. Don't go astray. I want you to just focus on this thought experiment. So the Black entertainment community, they give out their awards, great. A white man who has no Black in him at all, he's... in whatever ways scientifically you can measure such things, he is clearly Caucasian. He says, I identify as white, or as Black rather, and I want to compete for these awards, and he starts winning awards. Let's say he gets best actor, he gets the top awards. My question is, first of all, do you think that would cause a stir? Do you think people would take notice of that and maybe even be bothered by that?
Yeah, it wouldn't happen. It wouldn't get to the point where he wouldn't be allowed on the voting ballot for such an award. It wouldn't get that far.
Qualify.
Right. Because he rightly doesn't qualify.
He rightly doesn't qualify. Right. So I think every logically thinking person would recognize, okay, you can't do that because you don't qualify. So here's the analogy. Four female athletes are appealing a ruling that dismissed their challenge to a policy that allows biological males to compete in female sports. Selena Soule, Chelsea Mitchell, Elena Smith, and Ashley Nicoletti will continue to challenge the Connecticut policy represented by the Alliance Defending Freedom that That according to the law firm in an announcement yesterday. This is from the Daily Caller. The four high school female athletes have all suffered in their athletic endeavors due to the presence of biological males in their sporting events. Mitchell, for example, would have won the 2019 state championship in the women's 55-meter indoor track competition, but because two males took first and second place, she was denied the gold medal. Sol, Smith, and Nicoletti likewise have been denied medals and/or advancement opportunities. A federal district court dismissed the girls' legal challenge to the Connecticut Interscholastic Athletic Conference that allows biological males to compete in female sports categories, saying our clients, like all females, and I'm sorry, this is the law firm saying this, our clients, like all female athletes, deserve access to fair competition. That means authentically equal opportunities to compete, achieve, and win. But competition is no longer fair when males are permitted to compete in girls' sports. This is so obviously true, but it's amazing to me how many ostensible adults nowadays, they deny the truth. So this
and it's reported that they're defending trans rights. All of the news outlets, it seems like they're, if you have a problem with this story, like
you're a hater.
You're a hater and you have a problem with trans. And yeah, you're big.
I have a problem with unfairness. That's what I have a problem with. And it's just like the racism that you see on display, where it's just a different group of people who are being racially profiled and racially discriminated against. It's still racism. Even under the name of being anti-racist, they're still doing racist things. And this is an analog to that, where in the name of fairness, they're being unfair. And that's wrong. And it shouldn't happen. And these girls, and here's the other thing, Cyrus. What does the word woman mean anymore? I saw something from The Guardian on Twitter this morning, and it's something about blah, 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 I'll see if I could find it here, but it had to do with making the workplace better for females. I think that's what it was. I'll read it to you. It's right here. Hang on. Right at the tip of my finger, which I can't find, but it's right here somewhere. So anyway, oh, here he goes. Five ways, this is from The Guardian, the UK paper, five ways to make this year's federal budget more female friendly. So my response to that was just simply define female. How do you define it? What does that mean exactly? And if it means that, if it includes biological males who can slap on some lipstick and say that they are females, then what does the word female mean anymore? And what does it mean to have women's rights? What does it mean? What does woman mean? It doesn't mean anything.
I thought it meant you had two X chromosomes.
Well, hater.
That's what I learned that in school.
Going back to science. See, you're a hater if you invoke science here. But
right.
If you don't invoke science, then you're
but if we're talking about
science,
right? But if we're talking about global warming, then it's only we're only looking at science,
right?
Okay, I'm trying to get all of this straight. So I'm thank you. Thank
it's
you. It's
not
easy.
Me. Yeah, it's I'm learning the rules of the game myself as we go along. It's not easy, but here's the way I look at it, Cyrus. There is no such thing as a woman if we can't define it now. Obviously, we know what women are, we know what men are. But for the purposes of our culture, for the purposes of this country that we live in, with all of its weird rules right now, so many of which are incoherent and inconsistent, I think that's a very good question to ask, is just define woman. What does that mean? And it really, for many people, doesn't mean anything anymore, because it means anything you want it to mean. Therefore, it doesn't really mean anything. And these girls are suffering because they can't win medals that they would rightly be able to win because they have the talent, but they can't compete against the boys. It's as simple as that. So it's kind of like the racism. It's in an effort so-called to be fair to people, it's actually being hugely unfair to whole groups of people. And that's wrong. And we have to call it what it is. 888-914-9149. That's right. You mentioned J.K. Rowling Bring that up, Cyrus. I remember when that happened.
Yeah, okay. I don't remember when it was, but
she had already made her trillions of dollars
when this happened.
Right.
This
so
is
she
within
was
the last year after the pandemic hit. It was sometime during the pandemic. So she had tweeted something like people who menstruate. I'm sure there used to be a word for those people. Someone help me out. Wombin, wimpund, womud. And then, so she...
Are you trying to cast a spell or something?
I'm reading
her
tweet.
Allow that.
That's,
I don't allow
that. That is her tweet verbatim. I just grabbed it off the Googles.
And I bet the Twitter mob went after her.
And I have to edit these as I'm reading them here because this is all live. But the first person here is like, you have power and influence. Why would you do this? What does it achieve? Do you feel like more of a woman when you punch down? Are you threatened? it says some trans men menstruate. Why does that? Why does
I'm glad
that
you're saying this and not me.
And then another.
Keep going, Cyrus. Keep going.
Read the room.
Yeah.
How is this the right time to talk about this?
When is the right time to talk about it if this isn't the right time?
J.K.
to talk
Rowling
about
continues to align herself with an ideology which willfully distorts facts about gender identity and people who are trans. In 2020, there is no excuse for targeting trans people. So,
poor J.K.
And it goes on. It goes on and
she'll be alone with her money forever.
She'll be fine.
I think she's going to be okay financially.
It's me I'm worried about when they come for me because I don't have those billions of dollars.
No, you don't.
To make my pillow out of.
But you're right. You're right in what you're pointing out. And I had forgotten about the J.K. Rowling incident. Rowling, I'm not sure how to say it.
Good enough.
But yeah, this is another example of which we speak. Thank you, Cyrus. Quick time out. We'll come right back on Taco Tuesday with more of the Patrick Madrid Show.
Real life solutions you can believe in. The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Where do you find this stuff, Cyrus?
I have to dig. I have to dig to keep it fresh.
Dig deep. You dug deep on this
one. Digging.
Keep digging. Yeah, this one. I think my car speakers are going to blow out playing this thing. I mean, this is the one you can hear like three blocks away, and you only hear the bass.
They're like, hey, what are you listening to? I'm listening to the Patrick Madrid Show.
Yeah, or something like that. I'm totally with you on that. And I know you are going to play the other Taco Tuesday song at some point. 888-914-9149. I have another story here. Just putting this out there. This is science, okay? So don't get, Cyrus, don't. Just, this is science, all right? This is from the Washington Times. I wasn't asking for that, but that's okay. Now, just listen to this. Don't judge it. Just listen to it, okay? A study that was conducted by Pew Research just came out, and it indicates that 62% of whites who classify themselves as very liberal or liberal have been told by a doctor that they have a mental health condition, as compared to 26% of conservatives and 20% of moderates. Now, this is science, so please. The study... which was, as I said, was put out by Pew Research, found that young white people who identified as very liberal were almost 1.5 times more likely to report mental health problems than those who considered themselves liberal. Although the Pew study was published in recent months, a doctoral candidate consolidated the data on Twitter. It sparked a column by the news magazine Evie trying to dissect why this actually is. Now, one of the people involved here, this is Zach Goldberg. He's the doctoral student in question. He said, in speculation, he said that the disparity may be because white liberals were more likely to seek mental health evaluations than other ideologies. This could be a simple and true answer. Yet, there are a lot of drawbacks to this theory. The entire ideology, he says, forces its followers to wallow in feelings of helplessness and victimhood, as opposed to building resiliency against hardship, which helps to combat depression. One of the people quoted in the article says that liberals may also be more susceptible to white guilt and savior narratives, which brings them down, especially given last summer's continued Black Lives Matter riots. Misinformation may also be fueling their decline in mental health. Americans who identify as liberal or very liberal believe 1,000 or more unarmed black men were murdered by police in 2019, according to a survey produced on skeptic.com. In reality, only 12 were. Yet this perception reinforces their belief in their white privilege and continued self-loathing. Now, there's more here. And keep in mind, this is published by the Washington Times. This is a mainstream news source, and it's referring to the mainstream research organization, Pew, P-E-W, by the way. The vast majority of Democrats overestimate the probability of being hospitalized and dying from COVID-19 compared to other ideologies, a Gallup survey found. There's only a 1 to 5 chance of somebody with COVID-19 having to be hospitalized, yet 41% of Democrats believe there's a greater than 50% chance. Only 10% of Democrat respondents in the survey knew the correct answer. So I don't know if that is an indicator of anything more than that, but it is interesting if you ask me. And it does kind of track with some things that I've seen in real life. So we'll get a link to that if you're interested in looking at the science behind it. 888-914-9149. Let's get over to Frank now in Chicago. Good morning, Frank.
Hi, Patrick. I have a question about the rosary.
Sure.
After we say the creed, before we go into the decades, we have that mm-hmm. section where we say an Our Father, 3 Hail Marys, and a Glory yeah. Be. Okay. Mm-hmm. So here's my question. We know that the Hail Marys are for the intention is for faith, hope, and charity. So my question is about the Our Father and the Glory Be. I've been told that Our Father, the intention is for final perseverance, although I've never been able to document that. And I've never heard anything about the Glory Be. So do you have any idea what the intention is for that
well,
Our Father and that
Glory Be?
Well,
let's start with the source document for that. It's Rosarium Virginis Mariae. And that's a Latin phrase. It means the Rosary of the Virgin Mary. It was written by Pope John Paul II. It's, I believe, an encyclical. And it's all about the rosary. And it was in that document that he introduced the, just as a side note here, he introduced the luminous mysteries there. But in this source document, he gives the biblical basis for the rosary, the historical basis for the rosary, its development over the centuries. So that would be the place to go if you want the last word on that topic. But just going from memory, one thing I can tell you is that it's a custom to say, for the intentions of an increase in faith, hope, and charity. It's not a requirement. It's certainly not something the church says you have to do. In fact, when I pray the rosary, I don't pray those three Hail Marys for faith, hope, and charity. I pray them for the intentions of the Pope. So in my daily rosary, I pray for the Pope, and I specifically use those three for that intention. But that's okay. You can pray anything you want with those. So it's a custom, and it's a good custom, but it's a custom. So please keep that in mind. It's not a requirement, which leads to the other part of your question. That is, the Our Father and the Glory Be can be for any intention that you want. And there's no requirement. You don't have to say them for any particular intention. You can have any intention in mind that you want. It's really as simple as that, quite honestly. There's nothing more complicated to it than that.
Okay, I appreciate your information, Patrick. Thank you.
You're most welcome, Frank. And to make it a little easier, we'll get a link to that document from Pope John Paul II, Rosarium Virginis Mariae, and we'll post that on the show Twitter feed here coming up shortly. It is also embedded, by the way, at relevantradio.com/Patrick, so you'll find it there as well. I hope that's helpful. Thank you. We'll go now to Minneapolis and talk to John. Hi, John. Welcome.
Good morning, Patrick. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Wonderful on both counts.
My question is about St. Thomas, Doubtful Thomas. He ended up touching the wounds of Jesus to become a believer.
Right.
And I think about it after, for some reason, this year of all years, it just hit me as like, okay, the Lord has these open wounds, and yet we believe in our bodies being reincarnated at the end of time.
Not reincarnated, but resurrected. We don't believe in reincarnation. Okay.
Yes, I'm sorry. Resurrected. And I lost an eye, and I was just wondering if I'd ever get that eye back.
You will. You will. Your body will be perfected. And everything that is entailed by that, much of which we probably don't know, will be part of your glorified, resurrected body. So whatever limitations or things that are not proper to a fully functioning human body, you won't have those problems. So people who are missing limbs, for example, they will have those restored. Now, it will be their same body. This is what's interesting. You won't be getting like a new model. You'll be getting your same body, but it will be glorified and perfected. So you will have your eye back. And whatever else is entailed by this, I have a feeling it's going to be to our very happy surprise when we realize all the things that we will be able to do and enjoy with our glorified resurrected bodies. As St. Paul said, eye has not seen nor has ear heard the things that God has prepared for those who love him. So however good we think it's going to be, it'll be better than that, which I find very exciting.
I do too. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Did we get it?
Yes, we did. Thank you.
Okay. You're most welcome. Thank you. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Cyrus, I think you earlier today, just briefly, you mentioned, I think you did, the health and wealth preachers. Maybe you didn't. I don't know where I picked up on that. There was something this morning, but it ties into a story that I wanted to share with you. A Protestant pastor fraudulently got $1.5 million in the payment protection program, paycheck protection program from the federal government.
How much?
Well, here's the story. His name is Rudolph Brooks Jr. He's the founder and senior pastor of the Kingdom Tabernacle of Restoration Ministries in Washington, D.C. He's now facing up to 20 years in prison because he fraudulently obtained more than $1.5 million, in answer to your question, Cyrus, $1.5 million from the Paycheck Protection Program, which then he splurged on buying, among other things, 39 cars. Cyrus, have you ever owned 39 cars at one time?
No. No, I'm lucky to have one.
Not even once?
Not even once.
Not even once. So here are some of the cars that he purchased. He's 45 years old, by the way. He's arrested. He's in custody. Federal authorities seized some $2.2 million that he deposited in various bank accounts, as well as his 2018 Tesla Model 3. He also purchased a 2017 Mercedes-Benz S-Class, two 2017 Infiniti Q50s. Two of them.
Get that in your spirit.
A 2015 Cadillac Escalade, a 2005 Bentley. See, this guy didn't understand the concept of not drawing attention to yourself. I don't think he picked up on that concept. A 2005 Bentley Continental. He wasn't into like late model cars. He was into, you know, not really new cars, but newish cars. He's the owner of Cars Direct, in addition to being the senior pastor.
Ew.
Here's the connection. So in addition to being the senior pastor of the Kingdom Tabernacle of Restoration Ministries, which I understand has a help wanted sign out front, he's also the owner of Cars Direct by something, 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 Bob's Motors. It was incorporated in the Maryland State Department of Assessment and Taxation in 2010.
This guy's gets given into some of the used car salesman a bad name.
I will not comment on that. Some of my best friends are used car salesmen.
That's what I'm saying. This guy is giving them a bad name.
He is. That is true. So it's a sordid story, but it's an example of where greed gets the better of somebody. And I guess you figure, if you're him, that you can get away with this and that things will not come out in the wash. He initiated numerous transfers of paycheck protection loan funds from Cars Direct accounts to his personal bank accounts. Funds were used to cover personal expenses, purchases, restaurants, retail, groceries. So it's a real mess, and he's probably going to be in jail for maybe 20 years as a result of all this. What's the old saying? Crime doesn't pay. I remember, Cyrus, I'll leave you with this word of wisdom. When I worked in retail long ago and far away, there was some sort of theft that went on in the company, and I forget now what the details were. And I had an occasion because I think he was giving like an in-service to people who worked in the stores, you know, like how to spot theft or how to whatever. But I'll never forget something he said. It's always stuck with me. He said, there are a million ways to steal from this company. He said, but there are 2 million ways for us to catch you. Not me, but you know, whoever's doing it. And that always stuck with me. The whole idea of forensic audits and paper trails and bank accounts and all these things are recorded.
It will always come back to get you.
It will. And always. There's no, what's the point in doing that when sooner or later it's going to come out and come out in the wash?
Yeah, what's the, so you can have a year at most, 2 years of living high on the hog to mm-hmm. to lose it all.
And always looking over your shoulder.
And yeah, and the guilt and the sleepless nights. No thanks.
Yeah, for sure. And always wondering when will that knock on the door come?
When's the shoe going to drop?
Open up, please.
Yep. Because it's coming.
It is coming. And so for me, that whole thing is an analogy to, you know, don't sin. Don't sin. Just live a good life. God will help you do it if you ask him to. I'll be right back with hour two of the Patrick Madrid Show. Is that right, Cyrus? Hour two? I think it's hour two.
Yes, that's true.
Okay. I'm in a time warp, but I'll be right back right after this. Please stay right there.
Get that in your spirit.